G'day Jets fans, David here. Just a bit of an apology. Sorry in advance if you're listening to this podcast. We are trying out some new equipment with our live recording, and unfortunately tonight we had an issue with one of the files that was found during post-production. So if you struggle to hear Emma during tonight's pod, you'll be able to understand why. We apologise, and we'll continue to work on it. Thanks for sticking with us, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello Jets fans, welcome to this, the Jet Stream. It's the review episode of the semi-final, a semi-final where the Newcastle Jets were victorious 2-1 for Melbourne City. And here joining me today is, first of all, Dr. Emma. How are you?
I'm good, thanks Dave. Very good.
Luke?
I am fantastic.
And Ben, thanks for joining us again.
All right, it's good to be here.
So, guys, we're just going to get straight into this. There's a lot to talk about, and I think it's going to go. This pod's going to go long enough as it is. So, Em, how good were we in the grand final? I mean, how good was that game on Friday night?
I still cannot believe it. I literally cannot believe it. I was before the game telling everyone just that we've made it is awesome, and was absolutely trying to find the upsides in everything, and it's just absolutely incredible.
I think, especially after that early goal, I sort of got my expectations real low, like, oh yeah, we're not coming back from this. So for it to actually happen and us to come back, and the way we did come back was outstanding, and oh, I don't think I'll ever forget that. That was one, yeah, just great. I can't
not just a win, but what a win.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a win. I mean, the Jets seem to do semi-finals really well, Ben, particularly at home. We've got a fair and reasonable record in them. It was a terrific night. The weather certainly didn't put a dampener on the crowd or the celebrations, and it was just a special night to be there.
Yeah, for sure. It was good that even with the weather how it was, there was still quite a good turnout. No doubt could have been bigger with more better weather, but best part of 20,000 there for that game was a good effort, and there was a great atmosphere, especially for the last half hour of the game after one of the best goals we'll see, I think.
Well, we're going to get to talk about that, and we do have requests from the Rawcast to do a specific pod on that, and I think that we're probably going to talk about it enough. But before we get into talking about the game in turn, we're going to go and listen to the highlights, thanks to Fox Sports.
The team which has finished second in the regular season in each and every campaign in the Hyundai A-League has gone on to reach the grand final. What can Petrantos dish up this time? Decent ball. Hoffman should have buried it. Playing in his first final since the 2008 grand final. Run encouraged on by his fellow Novocastrians. Decent ball around the corner. It's a wonderful ball by Jamieson. Chance here. It's in. That man again. Bruno Fornaroli. He scores in 7 straight games against the Jets. He's Newcastle's nemesis. Petrantos going for goal. Oh, and a nearly surprised Bazanis to develop into a penalty conceding kind of situation, but Atkinson did well. The boy from Oh my goodness! Have you seen a more freakish goal in A-League history? Riley McGree with a scorpion kick into the top corner. It's play on for the Jets. Petrantos thought about pulling the trigger. Squeezes one out to Joey. Champness cut back. Chance. Championship with the Jets. Katrumbas. Calvert. After a decade-long wait, the Newcastle Jets are back in the big dance.
Okay, thanks again to Fox Sports for their use of the audio and the highlights there. I mean, the build-up all week, it was something that gradually built. We were getting almost hourly updates on the ticket sales from Laurie McKenna, with I think it was about 22,000 sold in the end. But we had a crowd of 19,000, which was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, part of that was my fault. I did buy one that no one showed up for. And ironically, could not even give away, given the state of tickets for the actual final. But the build-up was amazing. And it was actually funny. I was involved in some of the media build-up. And the media people were telling me, oh, well, we need to do this week because we're not sure whether we'll get a chance next week. Mm. And so they kind of threw all the big things at the hype this last game. So they're going to be struggling, I think, to up the ante for the media coverage in the lead-up to the actual final. So
I certainly don't think it's going to be hard to get excited about a grand final coming up, Luke. I mean, you, Emma, Peter, and I were out the front of the stadium doing Jetstream TV prior to the game, and thank you to everyone who joined in and participated, the kids especially. I think a couple of kids got it right as well.
I remember there was a 2-1 to the Jets that one kid did say, so well done.
I think Lucas as well, who we interviewed, got picked that score as well. But about 6 p.m. it started to rain, and I thought, oh, here we go. But it didn't deter people.
No, and it was I rocked up to the ground probably just before 6:30, and the line, especially for the Southern Hill, was before the gates opened, was from the ticketing box all the way to Turton Road. I've never seen it that far in my life.
Really?
Yeah, it was quite a sight. And then, of course, the Western Stand was looping around a lot. So, it was great to see everyone make the effort and get out and support the boys despite the weather, which, to be honest, wasn't that bad once the game started. I think it was just the one semi-heavy downpour just around half time, but otherwise it was pretty good.
Yeah, as for you were sensibly dressed. I was wearing my red shoes because they are Jets colored, and my blue dress because it's Jets colored, and neither of them were rain compatible. So yeah, if that had gone to extra time, I would have died.
I don't know about you, I made a late decision to change my shorts because I thought, oh, if it rains, I don't want to be in jeans. I don't want to be heavy, but I made the decision. Now let's go with the jeans. And my God, I'm so glad that I made that decision.
I have two match day outfits, a red dress and a blue dress, and one is rain compatible and one is not. But because 12:33 had featured me in my Jets outfit in the lead up, I was kind of locked into that outfit because people were recognizing me at the game because they'd seen my photos that day. So yeah, vanity caused me to nearly die of cold.
Well, I mean, the crowd packed in pretty early, Ben. And
neither of them were rain compatible, so
we talked about it.
If that had gone to extra time, I would have died.
Particularly the choices from Merrick to start Vargas and Bugard. In general, though, I think you got that choice right.
Oh, I 100% agree. I think both were excellent. Bugard had a great game, aside from probably one lapse in the whole game, which cost us a goal, unfortunately. But besides that, was outstanding. And I thought Vargas in the first half was probably our best player. I thought he looked every bit the part of a marquee and was super classy. He was always looking for the ball off the throw-ins and the first one to go looking for it, and really impressed me.
Yeah, I mean, I think perhaps with Ronnie Vargas, the way that he's been reintroduced into this team, he's starting to regain that match fitness. People probably have tainted memories of the first three rounds where I'd say that probably teams are still probably coming in a bit underdone with their fitness, and that allowed Ronnie a lot of space in those first couple of rounds. But certainly he didn't let Ernie down, Luke.
No, not at all. The only question mark was love tap he gave to Arzani early on in the first half.
Which, and the challenge that he threw in on Bratton as well.
Mork, I think.
Okay. Bratton went in on him after he went in on Arzani. So
the midfield were just chopping at each other all night. It's hard to keep count.
Yeah, but otherwise I thought it was by far his best game since returning from injury, which, I mean, let's be honest, it wasn't hard to beat some of those performances and stuff. But it was great to see him back performing at the right time of the season.
Let's talk about that love tap from Daniel Arzani from Ronnie Vargas. I thought he was lucky to escape a yellow, Em. Did you see it that way as well?
I thought the same thing, yeah. In real time and on seeing the replay, I think he was really lucky to get away with it. Everyone was, shouting out from our stands that there was nothing in it, but there was a
There probably wasn't anything in it then.
No, look, I'm with them. I thought he was pretty lucky to at least escape a yellow. You've seen challenges like that earn reds as well before. I'm not saying that he would have got sent. Probably, I'd say, Ben, the fact that it came early in the game played in his favour.
Yeah, and that tends to happen a bit, especially in big games. They're often a little lenient early on in the game. Steve Ugarkovich wasn't so lucky. But, yeah, sometimes you do get away with a bit early in the game, and later on in the game it goes the other way, and there's often a lot of soft stuff that just instantly gets yellow cards.
But so. I guess as well, I guess that refereeing in particular, it didn't happen because Bratton should have been sent off in the second half, and he was already on a yellow, does a fairly solid challenge on
Hoffman,
yeah, that forced him off with cramps and stuff. But yeah, that, I thought he was lucky to get away with nothing for that, and you can hear the crowd on the replays shouting off, 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 off.
Well, I thought they were chanting Hoff, Hoff, Hoff. But
I was shouting Hoff.
Well, speaking of Hoff, 7 minutes in, he had a golden opportunity, and I guess to go back to what Ben said, he was very lenient on Melbourne City by knocking that header over the bar. It was a wonderful delivery by Dimi Petratos into the box, but Hoff needs to be burying that.
Oh, my boy's just too tall. He's head and shoulders above some of the other players. You know, it could have gone in, it should have gone in, but, you know, headers are difficult. It's very easy to say it should have, but, yeah.
I think he's gotten too used to heading as a defensive player because it's not the first time this season that he should have buried a chance like that. I can't remember, it may have been Sydney or Melbourne City earlier on in the season that he, should have absolutely destroyed the goal with a header, but, yeah, hit it well over. I think maybe he's just not used to heading it downwards or...
To be fair, though, it is pretty hard to fight those instincts. Like,
oh, yeah,
as
absolutely.
As someone who's normally a defender, if I got sent up into the attack for a season, I don't think I'd be able to fight that instinct.
No, absolutely. It's, I guess while it... Yeah, I guess we're just lucky it didn't end up costing us in the end. But, yeah, no, I completely agree.
Well, it did cost us in a way because not long after that, Bruno Fornaroli managed to have a fortuitous bounce, Luke. It all actually started from Dean Bouzanis, the Jets playing long, and Bouzanis actually not deciding to pick the ball up. He literally came to him and he played it first time out wide to Jamison. Jamison beats Hoff, plays a really... lovely ball down the line and gets it around Georgeski and straight into the path of Vidicic, who managed to put it across, beat Bugard, put it across, and Bruno's there and our nemesis scores against us again.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It was as scrappy as they come, I guess. Yeah. The way that it sort of bounced off Topper, who's sliding in to try and clear it, off... Bruno's knee and then sort of just shitty bounces in to the goals, and it was just so anticlimactic and not the sort of goal you'd expect of a semi-final. I mean, they all count, but it was pretty subpar in terms of finishing.
Can I just say that was the one good thing Bouzanis did all night? I cannot believe how shit his kicks were the entire night. I was like, you're the first choice keeper in a semi-final team. Really, mate?
He was the crowd's bunny. Like the crowd will always pick a bunny that they're going to get into, and I really think the Bouzanis was it. It just organically grew.
He put more than half the goal kicks out over the sideline.
He brought it on himself.
We didn't have a choice for him to be the target. It was ridiculous.
Well... Ben, I feel that goal almost came against the run of play a bit. The Jets really started well, but City had their chances without really doing anything with it, and that was shown in the stats. They only had three shots all game, one of those on target being two on target. Bratton had one in the second half, but Bruno's goal was it.
Yeah, the Jets come out of the blocks pretty well and had a couple of good chances off Dimi's free kicks and corners. There was the Hoffman header. There was the one that he sort of double took and then just went through about four of our players, I think, and then just missed the far post. That goal sort of a sucker punch out of nowhere. bit against the run of play. They did have some ball up in our end of the field, but
there's a lot of nothingness, really.
Didn't particularly look too threatening.
Yeah, we seemed to handle it quite well, I thought. I wasn't nervous. I wasn't particularly concerned. We handled Arzani and his trickery quite well. We kept him isolated. We didn't allow Bratton a lot of time on the ball. And we were getting ahead and managing to clear it when we needed to. One thing I want next time we play City, we just can't let Fornaroli score, because if he scores again, he actually equals Griffo's record, and no one can claim to be the equal of Griff. I mean, that just doesn't happen. And we have been talking about the game, and the general consensus from I think many was that City actually had the better of the half. I tended to disagree. I think the Newcastle faithful certainly didn't see it like that, but those in the media, I felt, thought that City were ahead. We had Riley McGree's volley, but I thought the Jets were the better of the two sides in that first half, but were unlucky not to get on the scoreboard.
Am I not the Newcastle faithful? Because I thought that they had the better of the first half.
Okay, tell us why you think that.
I'm not sure precisely why I thought that. We had way too many times where we tried to play the long ball, and that was stressing me out, because if there's one thing we've learned this season, last season, all the other seasons, is playing the long ball doesn't work for us, which made me feel like we were a little desperate, and maybe not playing to the game plan, because I can't see how that would have been the game plan. But, you know, I was cold and wet, so maybe I was just a little bit cranky. But at halftime, I was doing tweet updates with photos of tweeps who I'd met before the game and saying, oh, well, at least an upside of the match is I've met these people, because at that stage I didn't think we were doing it.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah.
I walked away. I mean, I agree with you that the long balls in particular, we weren't getting that second ball, and that was frustrating. That was frustrating me terribly. But, Luke, I walked away and was speaking with the people I was sitting with and said, you know, we've created opportunities here. We're looking all right. I think that we've got a goal in us. We've just got to get that goal.
Yeah, I went up into, I guess, the food area or whatever the main walkway is of the Western
Concourse?
Stand. Concourse, that's it.
Hey.
I went up there cause to get out of the rain at halftime, and I was talking to my dad and my mates and my brothers that were there, and I think we all agreed that we should have been winning before the halftime. Apart from the goal, the potential penalty that went to the VAR and they turned off. They, I guess, disagreed. Let play. I think we had a throw in from it. Mm. The one Arzani went.
Mm. Well, let's talk about that if you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So, was it a pen?
I thought no. But the longer they kept putting it on, I was convinced they were going to give it. I thought, that's just typical. This is they've come in their half twice and they're going to score two goals.
What do you think, Ben? How did you see that? It was certainly Arzani. An interesting talker point. Yeah, the Arzani and Johnny Kay penalty claim.
Yeah, all right. So I was up the other end of the ground, so I didn't have a great view of it live. When I saw it live, I didn't think it was one, but as I said, didn't have much of a view. But as Luke was saying, the more replays they put up on the screen, you could see that he clipped his ankle. And the delay just went on and on and on. And you thought, when he started walking back towards the box, I thought he's going to point to the spot here. For me, I think if it had been given as a penalty, VAR wouldn't have overruled it, and vice versa. As it wasn't given as a penalty, VAR didn't overrule it, and I think it was within that obvious error band of...
Because Sean, it's interesting Sean Evans appeared to stick to his guns in that regards, because I probably reckon Chris Beath M was saying to him, it's a pen.
Which of the websites was it that had the headline, I'm not ruling the home team out because of this diver? And I was like, what the heck? And then I clicked on the link, and it's just, they've written this is what the ref said, and then they're like, well, that last part's speculation. But they made that the headline. So a lot of people thought that that's kind of what happened, that he kind of didn't want to buy into Arzani's bullshit. And fair enough, if you go and get yourself a reputation as a diver, you can't expect
to get those 50-50s after a period of time, right?
So did you think it was a pandemic?
I was like you. The longer it went on, the more worried I got. But then I noticed the VAR thing that flashes on the screen had gone away on one screen but not the other. Mm. So clearly they were just having technical difficulties. And then I realised I didn't need to be worried anymore.
Right. Well,
I think... It's a VAR comment in general, but if it's taking that long to make a decision, it's not a clear and obvious error, which by definition means that the VAR shouldn't be in play.
Yes. I tend to agree with that
because
logic.
Because if they're looking at that for three, 4 minutes... They've got to debate it. They've got to debate it.
They're re-reffing it.
Yeah. Exactly. And that takes away... it's the same argument we've had ever since the VAR's come in, that it takes away, I guess, the excitement and all the emotions of human error.
I felt a lot of emotions in that moment, I'll tell you.
Yes. But it's... Yeah, by definition, that shouldn't... If it's taken that long, it's not... You can't overrule because it's not clear and obvious.
So I was up in that corner that...
Bay 60?
Bay 60.
I was in Bay 59 right now. Okay. Front row.
Okay. Well, look at you. Oh, la-di-da. But I thought it was a pen. From my vantage point, even before they called it, I was surprised they didn't call it as a VAR review. And then when the ball went out and he stopped it, I just went, my heart sank. And
yeah.
I don't think we recover if we go 2-0 down. Fornaroli's more than likely putting that penalty away.
Well, he's had pretty rubbish luck with penalties the last couple of years, like Berisha has. So, yeah, he's missed a couple. Like, there was the Perth game last year. I think he had three penalties in the game. Reddy missed two of them, and they drew 3-3. Mm. Reddy saving the last one in injury time.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have a great penalty record.
There are a few moments in... I mean, Arzani would have been the other option, and there are a few moments in that first half, M, that I thought were good for the Jets. But the highlight for me was when Arzani did go down later on in the match and Nigel Bugard ran over and asked him politely to get back up. And then Daniel Georgeski did his best Adam to put so impression and ran half the field to run over and get in his face as well. Isn't that just fantastic?
Yeah. I think it's well known that I'm not an Arzani fan. So anything that puts the wind up him, I think is pretty good. And that's one of the things I love about Georgeski is he walks the fine line of riling the opposition up without actually crossing the line to do anything that's against the rules of the game. And I think that was brilliant.
He's a wonderful competitor, Daniel Georgeski, Ben. And I think he is... not underestimated, certainly, by his teammates. I'm not saying that. But I wonder whether people are seeing the same that I'm seeing, the camaraderie that he brings to the team.
Hmm.
He certainly seems to be a person that brings players together, bonds them, and is the first one to put the arm around someone. And even the footage post-match where he had his arm around Daniel Arzani and was really giving him a pep talk is a side to that he's certainly a considerate person, not just a good footballer as well.
Hmm. Yeah, I think from a fan's perspective, I think he's one of those players that you hate as an opponent, but you love as one of your players. I feel he's got that bit of, you know, mongrel about him that is, makes him a good competitor. I watched I think that was about a 3-minute interview with him after the game when he had a shower and in his suit and that. Maybe it was the next day, I'm not sure. Just talking about how he'd, you know, fallen in love with the town and was loving his football here and loving just being a clown at training and having fun with all the boys and stuff. And I think he does bring a lot to the squad apart from footballing, and he's been a real good acquisition for us.
Well, I mean, you saw when during the Sydney FC game back in March when Naboot got subbed off, ended up being his last game, Naboot's gone straight up to him and they've done their own secret handshake thing. And I think that's the sort of thing that, you know, he doesn't have that with everyone, but not everyone in the team's going to have it with someone. But the fact that he seems to have that with a lot of people, and the fact that, as you said, he ran 30, 40 metres specifically to go and yell in Arzani's face when he took a dive at some point. It was, I saw that at the point.
Fell over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it was,
It was pretty windy.
It, it's the sort of, I guess, fight that Newcastle loves to see. We saw it with Kenarovsky in that Sydney game when he sort of tried to staunch Mijaevsky, looking over him like, mate, what are you doing? So yeah, he's a great addition to the squad, both on and off the field, I think, and footballing ability aside, just having someone with that sort of competitive nature and I guess personality is great. Like, we're lucky to have.
While we're praising him, can I just say he was my club ambassador for my local hero award and has been a very good supporter of our charity since then. And also does a lot of charity work on his own. So even if he's a bit of a thug when he needs to be on the field, he's clearly a good egg.
Wonderful. Only sour note I'd probably take away from the first half, Ben, is the injury to Jack Duncan. It rules him out. It appears to be a quad strain. From
grade two, I heard.
Yeah, from Ernie Merrick's press conference. So more has come out today. I mean, it looked an innocuous clearance. It was with his less preferred left foot.
Mm.
But I didn't see anything wrong, but he went down, and despite admirably trying to carry on, you could tell it was over for Jack, and that's his season.
Yeah. It did look quite an innocuous clearance. Even when they showed the replay of him doing the clearance, his leg didn't really buckle or anything. He just, as soon as he kicked it, he sort of was a bit ginger after it. They brought the trainers on. He went to take that next goal kick, and I thought, this will be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
He kicked it, and straight away you just knew. I thought it was a knee or something, but yeah, at least better a quad than a ligament in the knee. But yeah, really unlucky for him to come so far in the season, having the great season that he's had, and pull up just short of being able to keep in the grand final. Mm. But on a positive note for the club, it's good having such a handy replacement in Moss.
Yeah, well, we are able... It's one place, Emma, that we do have real depth within the squad in terms of quality. Glenn Moss is not a bad option to come off your bench, particularly in a semi.
As I said in the post-match interview, we have the post-match video, sorry, we have the two most closely matched keepers in the A-League. So if anyone's going to lose their number one keeper during a final, we're the people who are best placed to handle it. I think Moss was unlucky to lose that because he hurt himself after Duncan went out and he came in. And so Moss could easily, if he hadn't gotten hurt, could easily have continued the season in the number one spot. And he was fine once he came on. There was, you know, he's an experienced keeper, so it's not like throwing him in the deep end mid-game is a problem. He would have been mentally and physically prepared for that. And, yeah, he definitely performed. So, yeah, I felt bad, though, because we'd been taking the piss out of Bezanis so much. And when Duncan actually did that kick, one of the girls I go to the games with is a keeper. And she was like, that's how you do a clearance. And then she was like, uh-oh, what just happened? So, yeah, it was very ironic for us.
And Luke, it's an interesting week now for Noah James as well. The young 17-year-old was rested from yesterday's NPL clash and will come onto the bench in place of Jack in the squad.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of talk last year about him coming into the squad after we had BK go out for the season with his injury, and just having, I think it was at the time when Piers Clark was injured as well, it was that they were trying to get... They were trying to get him onto the flight to Wellington as the reserve keeper.
Well, it is certainly going to be a big week for Noah James, mate. The first half, though, ended, Ben, with a dimmy free kick that... You were up that end, yeah?
Yeah.
So did it touch the crossbar?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it hit the crossbar with pace.
Because I would have expected to have seen water fall down from it or something like that.
So... From where I was sitting, I thought that Bizana saved it. And then when we didn't get the corner...
Yes, I did too.
I was like, how has he missed this? And then the replay showed that it did bounce off the crossbar.
He hit the crossbar so fast that water vaporized it.
You ask how he missed it, and then you realize it was Bizana's. so, moving into the second half. Look, let's go. Let's just... get into this. This is a special section of the podcast that has been requested by the Rawcast, the Brisbane Raw pod. And Emma, Riley McGree, 57th minute, he scores a goal. describe what you saw and how you remember this goal.
I hate you. I saw the back of the shirt of the guy in line in front of me waiting to buy beer.
Oh, what?
You knew that when you asked me that question.
I'm sorry, I forgot. I genuinely forgot.
Oh, no.
Well, then, I missed it completely.
You spent too much time around Pete.
I was in the beer line. But in my defense, I said to the girls before I went to get beer, Linda didn't want to go get beer because she didn't want to miss anything. And I said, if I go and get beer and we score while I'm gone, I won't be sad because it will mean that we scored. So then there'll be something to miss. So I feel like I kind of did this with my mind.
Right.
But yeah, no, I missed it. I missed the greatest goal in freaking history.
Then we'll come back to you. Luke, from where I was sitting, I saw Vargas. It was a good recovery from Daniel Drozdowski, first of all, to play it to McGree. And then his 1-2 with Vargas, I thought Vargas actually underhit. And as soon as he hit that, I've just thought to myself, that move's done. And all of a sudden, this ball loops and balloons in a perfect arc that could be, if it had a trail behind it, it could have been a rainbow. And
it may as well have been.
And it nestles into the back corner, leaving Buzanis standing like a statue.
What else is new?
Oh, come on. He did at least dive for the other attempt, for the other goal. But I thought it was an oggy. My brain couldn't comprehend how the ball did what it did in any other way than perhaps, I mean, Osama Malik's in their defense, so anything could happen. But there was a brain fade somewhere, and all of a sudden this ball's ended up in the back of the net.
I think when this play started, I was still in mid-rant stage about how we didn't get a penalty from Ronald, like the play earlier. He got knocked over and the ball got cleared out over the sideline. And I think I was going on about how the VAR should have been looking at that in typical drunk fashion. And no. Then, it's sort of Georgeski picks up the deflected cross, I guess, from Petrados. 1-2-3 happening, and then next minute time stood still, and I just see Riley McGree in all his glory stick his foot up, and then the ball and everything else, the ball was the only thing that was moving in all of the universe. And you're just sort of sitting there like, no, this isn't about to happen, is it? And then it did.
And then it did.
And then I lost my voice.
Ben, you were up the other end of the field. Yep. Were you regretting some of your choices in life at that stage?
Yes.
The other end of the field is better than at the goddamn bar.
But I was also thankful that we'd made the choice to sit undercover for the previous half an hour. So previous to that, we were quite happy with our choice. Yeah, look, we didn't have the best view, but on live viewing, I did think that's what happened. I sort of saw his back leg flick up, and I saw the ball arc, and I thought it was going about 20 meters wide because we were pretty much perpendicular to how the ball traveled, so I couldn't see whether it was on target or anything like that. Just saw the ball arcing, and I thought, it couldn't. And then the net rustled, and everyone just went absolutely mental.
Well, his celebration was fantastic. Actually, very reminiscent of James Holland when he scored on debut against the Knicks back in season 3. Ran away to the same corner, arms stretched out. Very, very, very symbolic, I'd say then. But because I think that's the same effect. Riley McGree's had the same effect on this squad this year as what James Holland had back in 08, 07, 08. But he was just mobbed.
He got tackled. In rugby league, I'm pretty sure they'd be going up. He'd be on report for what Hoffie did. He just launched himself at him. He had everyone. He had the players on the field, the subs, and the coaching staff running up to him. It was
most of the coaching staff.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one. I think he sort of settled himself in, readjusted himself, get cozy, and business as usual.
Listen, and we'll get to hear his press conference later, but Ernie does say that Riley had been practicing that all week, obviously tongue-in-cheek. Heel or flat part of the foot? Where do you think it came off?
Stop asking me. I wasn't there.
You've surely seen a replay, or have you just avoided it?
No, I've seen the replay many, many times. I'm pretty sure it was heel, but I don't know.
I don't think it matters. It went in.
It happened so fast. You'll all be happy to know I'm bringing a friend to the game on Saturday who's agreed to... That wasn't the thing. Thanks, Luke. Don't celebrate Tuesday. Who has agreed to do all the bar runs for me so that I don't miss anything this time.
Very good. Well, the Scorpion Kid certainly has made his mark on world football this week. Where do you reckon... And I'll go around the ground here and say, where do you think that this sits? Not just, I mean, in terms of goals that in Jets history, it's been described as the best goal in A-League history. Do you think that's do you think that's fair, Em?
Yeah, name a better one.
Oh, yeah, true.
Change my mind. Nah, yeah, the best.
Luke, best one you've ever seen live?
By far the best one I've ever seen live.
That was a dig.
I'll cry because I have to get up from my chair and, yeah.
Ben, best one you've ever seen?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I don't think it's a stretch to say best at the A-League scene either. I think it's right up there in not just Australian but world football. Not the best goal in the history of football, but, yes. You know, it was a fantastic goal.
If we go back to that, okay, was it last year or the year before that Giroud
last year.
This was better than that. So, by default, we should have it. He should have it.
It comes at a time when Ronaldo's just leapt 2.5 metres in the air and nestled it past a statuesque Buffon.
From 40 metres out.
Yeah. But it wasn't in a semi-final. No, it wasn't a semi-final, wasn't it? Was it?
No, it was in the quarterfinal.
Quarterfinal. Yeah, see, exactly.
The Champions League
and the A-League are pretty comparable.
Eh. I mean, they are in the same sentence.
but same Ronaldo breath. Hasn't scored in the A-League before, so...
Well, let's move on. And to our friends at the Roarcast, I hope that's enough. So they just continued to push, and they got their second goal scored by Hoffman. And M, did you see this one?
Yes.
Okay, good.
This one.
So it's another goal for Hoffy against his old club. I mean, that's got a sting for Hart fans.
Yeah, and?
Oh, City fans. Sorry, City fans from his old Hart days.
Don't care at all. I was so happy for Hoffy for him to score that goal. I picked him as a goal scorer pre-match, and he welled up the second that ball went in. He was wiping tears from his eyes instantly, and it was just beautiful. And it redeemed him for the header he missed earlier, I felt. So, yeah, it was beautiful.
Reading the articles in the Herald today, Luke, Hoffy spoke about Riley McGree's goal giving him the opportunity to reset and refocus on what he had to do. He certainly has made a good fist of popping up in the right areas at the right time and proving that I don't think we can no longer count him solely as a defensive player. I actually, as we've said before, many of us have said before, he's now an offensive player in this team.
Well, I think we were talking about when during that winless stretch when he had been moved back to defense and stuff, that with him not in up front and with Naboot no longer at the club, we were missing a lot of what gave us a lot of forward momentum throughout the middle of the season. So I think, yeah, he's absolutely, you can't consider him a defensive player anymore. He's more than earned the right to be called an attacking player as well.
Mm. Timmy almost lost the ball before he got it out to Champness. Ben, Champness made well with his introduction, I felt, when he came on.
Yeah, I think he definitely brought something when he came on. Obviously a very different style of player to Vargas. Vargas is very sort of laid back and fluid and classy, whereas Champness is very attack-minded and aggressive and just wants to get at his defender, and
very
which
direct.
He did. Yeah, very direct. yeah, he created some chances when he came on, including that one. And I was happy that he got the chance to come on. I was slightly surprised that it wasn't Paddo, but at the same time, I thought it was a good call. And was it his birthday as well or something like that? Yeah. That was nice for Merrick to give him the chance to go out like that.
Malik, I had a tongue-in-cheek comment before about Malik, but I thought that he had a really good game up until that point. And I guess City will reflect on that moment and just wish if he had his time again, he just literally put his foot through it. What do you reckon he was thinking trying to control the ball right in his six-yard box?
I have absolutely no idea, and I totally agree with you. End of the first half, I was saying if City win this, it's not City that's won it, it's Malik that's won it. Like, Bezanis was playing terribly. The rest of them were playing well, but not brilliantly. Mm. Every time we got dispossessed, particularly in front of goal, it was Malik. He was just there for everything. So I did briefly feel a little bit of sympathy for him that he balls this one up, but, you know, you're only as good as your last effort, I guess, and, you know, when it counted, he made the wrong decision, and it wasn't just the wrong decision, it was a spectacularly wrong decision. So, yeah, it really undoes all the hard work he did, and that's unfortunate for him.
It made for a nervous 15 minutes, Luke, and we were let off right at the end when Nick Fitzgerald missed that open header, free header right at the back post. And from my first watching of that header, I thought, oh, look, he's missed that. It was a fair way out. You know, it was a comfortable chance. But upon replay, that was a golden opportunity for Fitzgerald to put City, bring City level.
We're lucky he's not Hoffy height. If he's Hoffy height, he gets his head further up on the ball, heads it downwards, and it's 2-2. I think as well, the cross that went in from Azani from the left side of the field, it missed everyone originally. And I think when it bounced, it accelerated with all the dew on the field. So I think that's probably affected it as well, where if it hadn't been a wet night, that's probably not going to be going as fast. And he probably is going to be getting his head on the end of it and actually getting decent contact. But
well, that makes being saturated worth it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you bring up a good point. It was interesting Arzani as well had to swap wings simply so they could try and get him into the game, because I felt Johnny Kaye did a really good job on him in particular.
Yeah, I was the same. I thought Johnny, minus that one penalty claim, I thought he did really well to snuff out any opportunity for Arzani. He didn't get a good run in the first half, and you know, I think I said in the preview pod that Georgeski would go on whatever wing Arzani was on. Mm. They ended up chucking him on Georgeski's wing because Katrumbas was doing a good job.
Yeah.
That good a job. So I think fair credit to Johnny Kaye. He's pulled a big one out when it matters.
Absolutely. And Ben, there was then prior to the final whistle, the fracas with Sean Evans handing out yellow cards as if they were free Big Macs. Maccas, if you do want to sponsor us, you can get in touch with us at podcast@newcastlefootball.net.
Thanks for the Big Mac.
So Luke's claimed his. I reckon Evans almost at the end there risked losing control of the match.
Mm. Yeah, it was... did threaten to boil over a bit, but I guess he managed to rein it in and just... But
I loved when the argy-bargy started, that he just stepped back and
just let him go.
And just watched. And
oh, it would have been good if he sent Bratton off.
Yeah, well, that was pride. That was the challenge on Ugarkovic when Ugarkovic going through the middle.
And then the Hoff challenge was 3 minutes later or something like that.
Well, so, full-time whistle goes. Ben, what was your reaction?
Yell very loudly. just... elation is, especially, I don't know, how much context do you need? It was, you know, in the context of the club, the season we've had, I thought we always deserved to be in the grand final, but deserving and actually achieving it are two different things. Mm. And going down 1-0 early in the game, managing to come back and get the victory in the end to go through the grand final, yeah, it was just joy.
Luke, what about you?
I cried.
I am not afraid to say that I shed a tear as well.
Yeah.
After everything we've been through for the last 10 years, really. Probably more the last six.
Yeah.
Because Tinkler's reign started off quite well. But at least the last five or six, yeah. I was jumping as well, but there was a little tear there. That,
yeah, it was, I guess, with my history with the Jets and everything, to finally see them back where they should be is, and after everything, even as, like, work aside, as a fan, I was in Adelaide when they lost 7-0. I was there every rubbish day you can imagine. I think there was a
6-1 Perth.
Yeah.
Where we took the lead.
Yeah.
And then we shipped six goals.
Yeah. That, there was a day I sat out in 43 degree heat with maybe 4,000 others watching Wellington pummel us years and years ago. And Dad said to me then, one day when we start becoming good and, you know, next time we win a grand final, you will remember that you were there when, during the shit times.
And, it's always darkest before the dawn, my friend.
And yes, that Wellington day with 43 degrees with 4,000 people there was not a good time. Neither was the 7-0 or the 6-1.
Em, what was your reaction at full time?
Can I just say, I don't think Lukey's old enough to be this scarred. So, very deep, Lukey. I didn't cry. I was definitely on the happy side. My girlfriends both cried. So there was a lot of hugging. We hugged each other. We hugged some strangers. And then I bolted around the other side of the stadium to be with you guys.
Post-match.
That was my first thought, is I've got to get to David Burns. So, yeah.
I wasn't originally going to stick around, but after that, I said to my mate Mick, who was giving me a lift home very kindly, said, mate, I've got to stay.
I literally ran like a crazy person. I was like pushing past people. I was like, gotta get to the boys. So, yeah, I was pretty excited.
Well, another man who was very excited and had a beer in the press conference was Ernie Merrick. If you haven't already seen it, I encourage you all to jump on to the A-League or the Fox Sports website, have a look at his press conference with the beer there, and you'll hear a bit of that at the end of it. But here he is, Ernie Merrick, and his press conference.
Okay, fire away.
What are your thoughts?
I thought it was a real finals-type game. It was very edgy. There was not much given away. A lot of good defensive work. Not many clear chances on goals. And it wouldn't take too much to make a difference, I suppose. But it was... our boys were really built up for this game. They were really pumped. And what I said to them at half-time is, to get one goal, we'll win this game. One would have... I think they were ahead, so that would have been 1-1. And I said, as soon as you get the equaliser, we'll just go on from there. And we did that. And going into a grand final, the boys are very excited.
Did you think that goal would come
the way? Yeah, Riley McGree's told me he's been practising that for the last 2 or 3 weeks. He's been working on it, and it just came off for him. Great ball from Ronnie Vargas. I was really impressed with Ronnie and Nigel Bogard, because they've had fairly bad injuries. And both of them really stood up and justified me starting them. And their experience, I think, was first class.
I think that, obviously, that goal changed the momentum.
Yeah. With the crowd of, you know, 19,000, we knew that if we scored, the crowd would really get vocal. And it's that white noise that makes a big difference. Once again, the crowd got us over the line, so... Wherever we play the next game, the grand final, whether it's here or whether it's in Sydney, if we can pull our crowd down with us, it'll make a big difference to us.
Have you ever seen a goal like that, though?
I've never seen one quite like that, I have to say. I don't think the goalkeeper has either.
Before it came, was there a sense, you know, you had chance after chance,
I try to be fairly honest in sort of assessing the game, but right from the start, I thought we were the better team. Our defensive setup was first class. Their strength was Bratton, creative in the midfield, and he was nullified pretty well with both Demi and Ronnie. Fornaroli can cause a lot of trouble. Our two defenders did a good job on those, and we changed how they played a little bit to stop him coming off by putting Steve Ugarkovic in front, and he struggled to get much of the ball in the second half. And Arzani's a tremendous little player. He's a fantastic, but we had another 19-year-old on him in the first half and Daniel in the second half. But in the first half, young Johnny Katrumbas did a great job on him. Johnny's our fastest player, so we matched up our fastest. He hasn't played a lot this year, but when he was needed, he did a good job. So they're a good team, and I think Warren Joyce has done a great job with that team. And it could, you know, for a while it can go either way. But early on, we had a couple of great headers right in front of the goals. The crosses that Demi was providing were first class. And we didn't take those chances, and they took their chance. And then in the second half, it was our chances that counted.
Jack Duncan, is he talking about next week?
Well, they're all talking about being ready for next week, every single one of them, even Ben Kamtarovsky, who's got half a hamstring. They're all talking about it. It doesn't look good because it looks like, to me, he's torn a quad. So it looks like we'll either have a young backup goalkeeper or we see how Jack comes up. Jack's really disappointed, of course.
Jason Hoffman, after missing those couple of chances, finally very
well. Yeah, he did well, didn't he? Jason's learned to be in the goal-scoring area as much as possible, and it pays off because you either get the first strike or you get the crumbs, and you get the second strike, and that's what he did. He's got cramp. There's nothing wrong with it. He came off with cramp. He hasn't torn anything.
What did you decide to start Puga?
Oh, about 3 weeks ago. I was pretty keen on him playing. These are big games. Nigel's a tough character. I always thought if he can get up to 60-70%, we'd play him. And Lachlan Jackson's a good player, but you don't want to rely on youngsters in a key game like that. It was the same with Joey's tampness. Joey's a terrific person, came on and helped set up the second goal. But you don't want to start with boys like that. The nerves usually get to them. That's my experience anyway. So having a more senior squad out there was good, and that's why I never thought twice of Ronnie Vargas either. He's probably only about 75-80% fit, but he did a really good job in the first half as well.
How are you feeling personally? A, because you've taken a team from Witherspoon to the grand final in the space of 8 months, and B, this is going to be your fourth grand final.
It is. I hope I don't lose it on penalties. Look, it's been a real team effort off the park. Martin Lees, he said something to me that no owner chairman has ever said to me last night. He says, Ernie, whether you win or lose, you've done a great job, so don't worry about it. I says, can you repeat that so I can put it in my contract? I've never heard someone say that, but he was just really happy where we've got this far. Laurie McKenna has got to be one of the best CEOs in the league, so we've got a good synergy. And then Joel Griffiths, who's helped us sign players and do a few other jobs around the place. A great bunch of players that we've assembled. So, I mean, it's easy to say that I'm the coach of the team that's done that. I've done a good job, but really everyone should share that, especially the players.
Were you pinching yourself? Are you on the
ground? No, I expected we would have a good run this year. I didn't expect to get in the grand final, but I thought we would make big steps forward from where they've been the last few years, because we had the right players and the right team and the right coaching staff and fitness guys. I had a good feeling right from the start, but to be in the grand finals is a real bonus, so now we're in a real chance of doing something.
How important is it now to make sure the players don't get overawed by what they've just achieved, so bring them back down?
I think that's sort of been alluded to all the way through the year. You know, you've beaten this team, you've beaten Melbourne Victory 4-1, you know, you've beaten Sydney with 10 men, you know, are they going to get complacent or carried away with it? Or, you know, you've got Roy O'Donovan out for 10 weeks. But we just keep firing and scoring goals. We only went those three games where we lost sort of three players all of a sudden, where we didn't score goals, but we scored 8 the last game. We scored another 2 today, and I hope we can score some next week as well. But these boys just keep meeting the challenge. Whatever the challenge is, they keep meeting it, and that's a sign of a really good team, and a team that I hope we can keep together and build on.
Coach of the Year will be awarded on Monday.
Graham Arnold should win Coach of the Year, in my opinion. He has done a fantastic job, and to be under pressure and to stay at the top 2 years in a row, he's just been terrific. So that's where my vote went.
There's some young boys in that team, homegrown boys that have been through some tough times. You're particularly pleased them in the progress they've made?
Yes, it's the connection with Newcastle is very important, and we've now brought the academy on board, and we've got players coming through the academy and from this, not only Newcastle, this region, to have Angus Thurgate as an emergency player and playing at 17 during the season, and having Jason who's you know, done it tough, and Nigel who's been here for a while and suddenly thinks he's going to miss out on finals football, and he performs and he's a local, and bringing off the bench Nick Cowburn, so there's a lot of Newcastle boys are from this region. I think that's very important to keep that connection. It'll get stronger now with our academy, especially with Laurie McKenna coaching the youth team with Labby Haliti. Is that it, guys? Can I have my beer now? Thank you very much.
Okay, there he is. Thanks again to Fox Sports for the ongoing use of that audio. Emma, who is your player of the match?
Okay, so in the video that we did post-match, I went with Riley, which I would say is very unusual for me because I hate when people pick the goal scorer as the man of the match. But it was just such an epic goal. I didn't feel like I could go past it. In reflection, I think maybe I want to go with Boogs for the effect he would have had on the mentality of the team.
Drink.
And that... I will a lot, don't worry. The fact that he put in a full game coming back from injury, the fact that he put in a full good game coming back from injury, I just think that is so terribly impressive. So, yeah, I'm going to switch my answer and go to Boogs.
Luke?
If you'd asked me Friday night at full time, I would have given it to Riley purely for the goal. I've watched the game at least 3 times now.
Have you really? Where do you find the time?
I stay up late. And I would absolutely give it to Riley still. Goal aside, he, especially the lead-up work for the winner, he doesn't have a single chance in the world to get this ball, yet he chases it down like a hound dog and wins it, and that's what leads to Petrados laying it off. The way he never gave up, that he just kept chasing, and I think he pushed himself. That goal switched something for him, and he pushed himself so hard after that. And I guess his ability and how he managed to stop the City midfield do what they've done all season, it was, yeah, I think I would still stick with Riley.
Ben?
It's tough because I think nearly everyone put in a fantastic performance. I think I have to agree with Emma and go with Boogs for similar reasons. I wasn't sure before the game if he was going to start or not. He did. I was happy for him to start, and he put in a fantastic performance football-wise. I'm sure he brought a lot to the team, organization, and with the mental side of things, and leadership, and as I said, he was probably short of a gallop, but he didn't show it at all during the game. He was imperious. I think him and Topor did an outstanding job on Fornaroli, who's, I think, one of the best forwards that the league has seen, and he's no shrinking violet, and they were fighting with him all game and hardly gave him anything. So
I think as well, just the fact that it was less than 8 weeks ago that he fractured or broke 2 bones in his leg, and he's back playing 90 minutes in a semi-final. Like, that's outstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Boyce is still rolling somewhere.
We'll come on to that in just a minute. For me, and if anyone's interested who is just tuning into this for the first time and they don't understand the joke behind mentality and when we all say drink, look back through our past episodes and have a listen to the Scott Miller drinking game. The episode that Ferns, Gav, Bodes and I did, we were live at West's Leagues with Belinda Carlisle playing in the background. Belinda Carlisle was in concert that
Belinda
night.
Belinda Carlisle was like drinking with you guys for a second. I was very impressed.
Special guest.
We couldn't get her on. She was a bit shy. But yeah, that will explain the Scott Miller drinking game to you, why we always say drink with mentality. For me, I said on the video that Roy O'Donovan was my player of the match simply because of the pressing effort that he put into that game. And while he didn't get the service or the opportunities to... he had one chance, actually. He skied it in the second half. But I thought that he just worked so hard and gave us that press and didn't allow Malik, Schenkenveld or Bouzanis the opportunity to settle at all. But upon reflection, I'm actually probably going to give it to Johnny Kaye. Johnny Alzani was promised for big things. A lot was expected of him, and he kept this young kid quiet. Johnny for me is my player of the match. So there was another game on Saturday night, and that was going to decide our opponents. Luke, Sydney versus Melbourne Victory. Not a bad game.
It was. I've got stuff to say about this game, but I'll save it for later because I'm sure it's going to come up at some point. I guess you could, in terms of semi-finals, they just seem so polar opposite.
Hmm.
The fact that we...
Had a crowd?
We had a crowd, yeah. And the other one, just chaos.
Yeah.
Wherever you looked. And not just result-wise, but on and off the field by actions... people took and...
Mm. The funny thing? I know Sydney fans who didn't go to the semi because it was expensive and they wanted to save their money for the grand final.
Isn't that just... Yeah. Yeah, that's...
Hi, if you're listening.
Oh, wow. Ben, I think that Victory certainly took a book out of the Jets and the Central Coast Mariners playbook for how to approach the Sydney game and how best to get around their midfield and take advantage of the spaces in behind that their fullbacks pushing on allowed, and they executed it to perfection.
Yeah, I thought Victory were deserved winners. The first hour of the game, I thought they were dominant. I didn't think Sydney rarely looked like scoring, and Victory looked threatening whenever they got the ball and went forward. As you said, I think playing on the front foot and not sitting deep and allowing Sydney to play in and let their playmakers have, you know, free time on the ball 30 metres out from goal, which is how they've been able to create chances. Victory were aggressive. They were they looked to get forward quickly, and their wingers had good games. And I thought Berisha had a good game as well. His setup for Troisi's goal was excellent.
We don't see nice things about Berisha on this pod, Ben. You can go now.
It was still a good pass, though.
It was a lovely pass. Sydney just looked flat. I don't know about whether you all felt that as well. They just looked like they couldn't get going. They were sluggish. Maybe the pitch was heavy. I don't know. But they just didn't seem to be able to have any spark or get going.
Yeah, I feel like they were done. Like, they emotionally checked out before this game. Either they thought they had it, or they'd done enough celebrating about what they'd achieved already this season. Mm. I feel like it was the psychology that lost them the game, not their ball skills. But that's hilarious and serves them right, because they should have worked harder. They shouldn't have taken it for granted. I'm just disappointed that we can't be the team to rain on Sydney's parade.
Mm. Luke, it could be almost a trailer for a movie about a person who nearly destroys their one opportunity and then through a moment of redemption manages to recapture it and prove that they can rise again. Terry Antonis had one of his more memorable games.
Yeah, he... I don't think he'll forget that one anytime soon. Gee whiz. I think it's... It was sort of similar to Malik's effort with setting up our winner on Friday night, where he was the best player on the field and yet gives away the equaliser in the last 10 seconds of added time to send it into extra time. And at that point, you know, he was visibly crying that he'd let the team down, which, end of the day, didn't end up mattering because he went on and scored a fairly decent goal as the winner to send him through. But, it was a tale of two halves.
His winner, Ben, was almost Tariq Elrish-esque. Tariq, yes. where he beat two players down the side, managed to push in front of a third, and shot before the fourth could come across and block.
Yeah, it was almost unbelievable how he managed to do that, because with his own goal, I think he was so visibly exhausted from the mountain of work that he'd done during the game that he just did not have the control left in his legs to technically properly clear the ball, and that's how the Oggy went in. So the fact that he was able to muster a 60-metre sprint to bust two tackles and then still have the ability to put in a good shot at the end.
I wonder if he's Catholic and that was powered by guilt.
Okay.
The best thing about his own goal was the look on Berisha's face.
Really?
The camera went straight to Berisha after that happened, sitting on the bench, and yeah.
He had the biggest
really
shit-eating
grin. You couldn't really see much of his face. He had it all covered. He's gone fetal.
Yeah, I
that was before extra time.
That was before extra time, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, if the cameras panned to Berisha, they quickly changed. And Luke, I think this is probably what you're referring to as the fracas. That might be the word for the pod, I think, today.
Should I tell you it's pronounced fracas then?
No, you shouldn't. I'm the host. the fracas between Jean-Paul Demarini, to say that right, and Dean Anastasiadis as well, the goalkeeping coach for Melbourne Victory, that involved David Carney.
It was remnant of a night at the front of King Street Hotel.
Okay.
Sorry, I got cramps in my legs.
Emma.
No, I got words. Yes, that's exactly what I was talking about. Yeah, I mean...
Oh, thank God people don't pay for this.
Please pay for this.
So you got more words. Continue.
Yeah,
no,
yeah. It was quite a spectacle, as you said. It was so just strange to first of all have coaching staff run onto the field and then approach opposition players when there's still 3+ minutes left, and then to hit them. I mean, who doesn't want to hit Carney? But still, you can't do that. And I think the penalty, especially for JP, is nowhere near what it should be, because if you did this in all age, you'd be gone for a year at least. 4 weeks is nothing. I know Melbourne are looking at their own sanctions for it, but it doesn't set a good precedent that...
They can't appeal it, surely.
I think
they just copped it on the chin?
I think Melbourne are looking to suspend him longer, like internally.
Wow.
Melbourne should be very happy with getting away with that, I believe. Four weeks is off lightly. As Luke said, like if a coach came in a local football game and struck an opposition player during the game, I think even a year would be on the lower side of what they could be looking at. It was ridiculous.
Well, yeah. What was I going to say? Someone else talk.
So, okay, Sydney and Melbourne City are both out. They're the two teams that in the lead up to the semifinals both said that they were already preparing for the grand final. If it was their godforsaken right that they were entitled.
Their destiny.
It was their birthright to be in this grand final, and they're both out.
But that's their undoing. That's what I mean when I say Sydney had mentally checked out. They had not prepared for a semi. They prepared for a grand, and they forgot you had to get through the semi to get there.
Well, Broska's him very vocal about when we get to the grand final, and it supports what you're saying.
That was all like season. Malik saying...
All season, yeah.
That was like Malik saying in the press during the week that, oh, yeah, we're preparing for Sydney and everything. Like... Mate, Sydney didn't make it, let alone you guys. So.
There certainly can be a lesson learned from other clubs about levels of cockiness.
So I got a text message from my uncle over the weekend.
Good for you.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate when he texts me. It makes me feel loved because I don't get them from many people. but he was congratulating.
We can publish a number on this pod, and people can text you if the
you got angry at me when I tried.
Luke would like to get text from you, so you can talk to him instead.
No,
carry on. Your uncle's text.
Yeah, and he was congratulating me on the Jets making the grand final, and said that he was going to be supporting Newcastle, whoever they were playing. he lives in Sydney. He's been a Sydney FC fan since inception.
Mm.
And, so I said to him, I got my ticket sorted. He's like, awesome drama last night. I was happy for Antonis in the end. Glad Sydney FC lost too arrogant. Best ever? No. So I think it's pretty bad that Sydney FC, they may be getting results and everything, breaking every record that the A-League has. But, you know, we're doing that as well, and we're gaining fans. We're not losing them. Like, my uncle's just fallen off. He's not having a bar of it anymore.
Yeah, right. It's interesting that your uncle's gone down that path. And, I mean, I guess Sydney, with all their thoughts about getting into the grand final, it leads us into talking about us hosting the grand final, which was certainly a very big surprise. It's exciting times for us, and we have completely now sold out 30-odd thousand tickets. So it's going to be a packed house at McDonald Jones Stadium, and it's also going to be a big week on the Jet Stream with a couple of additional podcasts coming your way, further to the review that will come out on Thursday. I'm hoping to have a conversation with Jason or Dave from For Vuck's Sake and have that up on Wednesday morning. And then we will also be back on Thursday so that we can review. We'll record on Thursday so we can have on Friday the reaction to the squads that have been announced and also the referee appointment for the game. Some announcements that's also come out from the club. Laurie McKenna has said that there will be a single jet flyover from the RAF prior to the grand final. That's very exciting. And as well, Andrew Naboot has taken out goal of the year at the A-League Awards this year. Graham Arnold beat Ernie Merrick, unfortunately, and disappointingly.
Apparently taking a club from last to grand final isn't good enough.
No, absolutely not.
It's all right. Ernie can have it next year.
Yeah, well.
When Arnie's gone.
Anyway, well, it promises to be a big week, and tune into the Jet Stream. We'll be out certainly doing things on grand final day, but in the lead up to the grand final, we're going to get you ready. This is the one place that you want to be. So thank you very much for joining us for this review episode. Ben, thanks for being on.
My pleasure.
Luke.
Thanks for having me.
And Emma.
Thanks heaps, Dave.
No worries. Jetstream, Facebook at Jetstream Newey, Instagram at Jetstream Newey, Twitter also at Jetstream Newey. I don't have my usual blurb in front of me. You can also get in touch with us at podcast@newcastlefootball.net. Thanks very much for listening. Until then, go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
All hail the Scorpion King.
Go the Jets.
Oh, jeez. I am the Scorpion King!
Yeah, I made that photo. It didn't get as much traction as I hoped for online.
Probably because it came from you. You can't beat your Zadkovich photo from all those years ago.
That was world class.
You had another good Simpsons one earlier in the season, though, didn't you?
I have many good Simpsons ones.
No, but a particularly good one.
Oh.
Man.
Remember when Mel first met you? She's like, you're the guy who made that meme. Remember?
There's so many memes. Oh, I'm down, Benjamin!